Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by Gold Boys. Coming up on the show, Gil Alexander of A Numbers Game will join us. We will discuss Wimbledon, get his thoughts on some NFL bets, Major League Baseball. So excited to talk to Gil. Wimbledon, I believe, starts on Monday. So he's going to have some plays for futures, matches individually. I know I talked to him a little while ago, and there's a lot that he likes. So excited to talk to him. And look, July 1st, Hall of Fame game. NFL preseason August 1st, so only a month ago. I know it's not the real thing, but it's football. You can watch it, you can bet on it, and it's a month away, and that means the real thing is not that far around the corner. It means college football a few weeks after that. We had Brad Powers on a couple days ago Friday to talk some college football, so go back and listen to that if you didn't get a chance. But July 1st also means NBA free agency. There's not a ton. I'm recording this early Sunday night. Looks like Paul George might be going to the Sixers. That's really the big domino. Klay Thompson, it looked like, could go to the Lakers, but the Clippers also in the mix. The Mavs also in the mix. Klay Thompson in year 2024 doesn't move the needle. The bigger story is that he's leaving the Warriors, and those guys, Draymond, Klay, and Curry, and really Klay and Curry. And throw Draymond in there, but that's one of the all-time great duos, the best shooting duo of all time. Won all those championships, four championships, been to a bunch of finals. That era is over. So that's kind of sad. It's just the way sports works, but Klay Thompson's going to have a new team. But as far as the impact on the court, it really doesn't matter. And, you know, it was 5 years ago on Sunday, it was 5 year anniversary of the 2019 free agency. And that was a monster free agency where Durant left the Warriors, Kyrie left the Celtics to join the Nets, and Durant and Kyrie both teamed up to join the Nets. And Kawhi was a free agent and took him a week or so, but he joined the Clippers and took Paul George with him via trade. So this is not that kind of year. There's little role pieces here and there. There's role players here and there. There's guys you've heard of, but there's really not a lot of big dominoes, nothing that's going to move the needle except for George going to Philly. Now in the East with Embiid, you got to see him stay healthy, which he hasn't done. You throw in Maxey and you put George on that team. If you can fill the rest of the team out, that's at least somewhat of a threat to Boston. Again, if Embiid can stay healthy, if George can stay healthy, George has had a hard time, you know, staying on the court at times too. It wouldn't be the favorite, but that would, I think, put them, well, it's interesting. Would that put them neck and neck with the Knicks, above the Knicks? I think it would be close. I think it would be close. They're a little top heavy. They're relying on Embiid's health and George's health. Knicks are a little deeper, more balanced, but that would, I think, Boston would still be the clear favorite, still the clear best team in the East. And if Philly does add George, it's Knicks, Sixers, neck and neck for two. And then the Bucks, I think, probably take a step back behind those two in the four spots just because Dame looks a little older. It just looked so bad last year. So would make the East stronger. The East is just such a bad conference. And we saw Boston just cakewalk to the finals. Maybe if you put George in there, Knicks are better. Maybe get a better year out of Dame and Giannis. In Milwaukee the second year, and maybe the East is a little bit better. But other than that, not a ton in the NBA. LeBron's going to go back to the Lakers. Doesn't look like these other big teams, big moves are going to happen. You know, Durant's going to stay with the Suns, where it looked like, hey, would Phoenix be interested in recouping picks? And maybe they will down the road. Rockets are supposedly interested, but doesn't seem like that's going to happen this summer. So as far as a bet, Nuggets at plus 800 is still the one that jumps out to me where, you know, it ended poorly for them. And it's funny, I had Gil on the night they got eliminated. And that's really where the playoffs got off kilter, got off track. They weren't that far from being back this year. They have the best player. Not a great bet. You don't want to tie up your money this long, ideally. But at 8-1, the Nuggets are an interesting bet. And my goodness, some of these guys getting just insane money. You never heard of Patrick Williams getting $90 million. The Raptors gave $275 million to Scottie Barnes and $175 million to Emmanuel Quickly. I mean, I know it's almost monopoly money and you got to spend the money on somebody. And with the TV deal, all these teams have the extra money to spend, and hey, it's use it or lose it. I get that, but oh my goodness. It's definitely a bit of sticker shock. Obi Toppin gets $60 million. I mean, these are role players. If that bench players and not all stars, not superstars, not anything except just, you know, average starters getting a ton of money. It is eye popping numbers. And you'd think some of these teams, I know they have to spend it on somebody, but you figure at some point they have a little regret. Like, wait, how much should we give him? Why did we need to give him all this money? There's a lot of that where you look at the signing and say, how much did he sign for? So that's the basketball. We'll see if George does go to Philly. Quickly on the baseball, the Yankees with a much needed performance. Cole looked better, and there was the Yankees had action warming in the bullpen in the second inning. on the Sunday game here against the Blue Jays. Uh-oh, what's going on with Cole? He was awful this last start against the Mets. He wasn't throwing hard in the first inning. Well, he settled in. He came back out to pitch. I guess it was just the guy they just called up was getting loose because he just came from AAA and he wanted to get some work in. Cole ends up finishing five innings, a good performance, not great, but a very good, very encouraging performance. I think encouraging is probably the right word. Yankees hit. Soto's back in the lineup where he missed a day. We thought maybe he have to go for MRI. He's a surprise addition to the lineup late. Judge homers. What Judge is doing is just insane now. Gunnar Henderson's right there, and Gunnar Henderson's going to put up an MVP-worthy season too, so that's going to be a fascinating debate. But Judge, 31 homers, 82 RBIs, and this is the All-Star break. His over-under for the season was like 42 and 105. I mean, he's almost at his numbers for the full season at the All-Star break. It's incredible. Just absolutely incredible what Judge is doing. But the Yankees certainly needed that win. They've just had bad performances from Rodon, the bullpen, the lineup. So maybe the Yankees start to turn a corner here, and that was an encouraging performance. Still going to need some trades and going to need some of these guys to play better, but that's looking like it's going to be a good race down the stretch between the Yankees and the Orioles. Orioles played Sunday night against the Rangers. That game hasn't started yet, so we'll keep an eye on that. And only three games on Monday, which is odd. We have the Astros and the Blue Jays, Brewers, Rockies, and there's one more, Mets and Nationals. Very, very unusual. And baseball is just so clueless with these schedules. Put your product on TV. Let people watch. Put games on earlier. Flood the airwaves with your product. That's how you get people interested. Just put it on TV. You almost hide the sport. It makes no sense to me. So only three games here on a Monday. But Wimbledon does start for those of you interested in that. We'll talk to Gil Alexander, get his thoughts on that. NFL futures, that is next. This is the Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him on a numbers game on Monday through Friday, 10 to 12 Eastern. You can catch him the Beating the Book Megapod. It is Gil Alexander. He joins us now. Gil, what's going on, man? I really tried to emulate your ability to introduce guests. I'm not there yet, but I'm trying.
Well, listen, it's a talent. I mean, I think you're born with it, Will. I think we all know that. I don't think you can learn that over time.
You have this long windup where you can just make anybody seem like they're coming up as like the next is the greatest guest ever that's about to come.
Thank you. That's a good thing, right?
It is.
I'm more concerned with setting the record for most appearances on your podcast. And if I find out someone's been on more than I have, there will be hell to pay.
Those numbers are confidential. Last time you were on, speaking of your appearances here, I think we were both off kilter. It's funny. We kind of lost track of the playoffs. The playoffs got away from us that night, and we never really got them back. That's kind of the night when the playoffs just got off kilter, and they never really got back on kilter.
I don't think I've ever been more traumatized on a podcast than I was that night. We're talking about the Nuggets, when the Nuggets got eliminated. We're just so shell-shocked trying to make sense of it.
Yeah, and the playoffs were just never really good after. Minnesota, Dallas was weird. Indiana, Boston, the games were good, but never really felt like Indiana was going to win, especially after they blew game one, and then the finals were what they were. So, yeah, that was kind of the source of the root of the problem. We'll start with Wimbledon, men's side. Let's just you take it whatever direction you want to go. Overviews, futures, just a few things, bullet points we need to know here.
Okay. First thing you need to know is Novak Djokovic is playing. There was some doubt after his injury at the French Open whether he would be ready to go for Wimbledon, and apparently he's superhuman, so he is ready to go. I think Sinner is the appropriate favorite on the one half. Djokovic is on the second half. I think Sinner has the edge over Alcaraz, just because even Alcaraz's run at the French Open was not like great Alcaraz. He's a better player last year. He needed an umpire reversal to get by Sasha Zverev. So Jannik Sinner has been the best player in the calendar year of 2024. So the question becomes then, where are the bets on the men's side? And let me just fully disclose this, that I made all my bets on the women's side. So I didn't make these on the men's side, but if I did, this is what I would have recommended. Quarter two, Tommy Paul, whatever number you can get him at. I did this pre-draw Friday morning, right after the draw was made Friday morning on the radio side, but they didn't have the odds out yet. But Tommy Paul Q2, Jack Draper Q3, and I think if you think Djokovic is vulnerable, either Hubert Hurkacz Hurkacz on the in quarter four, or Alex de Minaur in the fourth quarter. I think those are in a men's tour that is very top heavy and where the favorites are justified and the prices aren't that sexy. If you're looking for sexiness, that's it. Tommy Paul Q2, Jack Draper Q3, and then either or Kotz or de Minaur Q4. But again, Will, I didn't personally end up firing on any of those.
And then in terms of just winning the tournament, Sinner's the short shot +175, Alcaraz +250, Djokovic +350, and then there's a fall off after that. Would you play any of these guys to win the whole thing, or would you just stick with the quarter?
I would stick with the quarter, man, because I don't think Jannik Sinner is going to get beat. Though I do think like his first round opponent, Jannik Hanfmann, might be a good play on the game line +9 games, because Hanfmann is pretty good on grass. So I think he'll push Sinner a bit enough to cover the game spread. But I think Sinner and Djokovic, I don't know if I can say Djokovic. I think Sinner is headed to the final, and I think Sinner is the rightful favorite to win it all. This is his year, man. He's the best player in tennis. If Novak Djokovic ended up winning this and winning his 25th singles Grand Slam title, would I be shocked? Of course not. But I think like to say that anybody else is that live to win it would be irresponsible.
And I've never noticed these before. I don't shop a lot, but DraftKings has winning quarters. So first quarter is +175, second quarter is +225, third quarter is +750, in the fourth quarter is +220. Are these common markets, or is this kind of a new thing?
That I don't know. Again, you being on the East Coast has an advantage over me. You have an advantage over me because in Nevada, we don't have any of this, even close to that. But that's sort of the equivalent of like which division will win the Super Bowl, right? So that's interesting that goes. But by the way, those numbers make sense. It makes sense that Q3 is the long shot because that's the Sasha Zverev quarter with Jack Draper in it. And it makes sense why Q1 with Sinner is the, I believe you said it was the short shot there.
Yeah, and you would have a lot of fun, I think, with these because you could pretty much pick any player too and bet stage of elimination. Like Alcaraz going to lose in the semifinals +210, runner up +550, quarters +550. So, I mean, there's just so many different ways to play it. What's up?
Yeah, they've been doing that for a while. That's such a great market. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fun one. How about on the women's side?
All right. So the women's side, I think, is where we have a lot of opportunity. So when you look at grass numbers, they're not nearly as robust as hard court or clay. Grass season is 5-6 weeks every year. So even if you go back a year, it's like not that much tennis. But if you do, Iga Świątek, the world number one, still has the best grass court numbers, which kind of surprised me. But she is in a brutal quarter. She's got Siniakova. She's got the winner of Ostapenko, Tomjanovic, freaking Collins, Haddad Maia, Vondrousova, who's the defending champ, is in her quarter as well. By the way, Ostapenko is the answer to the trivia question of Iga Świątek is 500 or better on against everybody on the WTA Tour except for one person. Who's that? It's Yelena Ostapenko, who she's 0-4 against. So they stuck her kryptonite in her quarter as well. The real opportunity, though, for me is so you have Iga, who is playing this with no pressure because she's going to go to the Olympics, play on clay, and win that. So it's this weird little hiccup in the middle of her extended clay season, if you will. So what does that mean? That means she either plays with no pressure and plays great and, you know, goes deep, or she loses to any one of these great opponents in the quarter, and she's like, oh, well, I'm just going to go win a gold medal. So it's really tough to go crazy on Iga, though. Would it surprise me if she won the whole thing? She's going to win a Wimbledon eventually. Who knows if this is the one or not. Quarter two is Elena Rybakina's quarter. She has pulled out of four tournaments this year. When she plays, she's really good, but she's pulled out of four tournaments. Gastrointestinal issues. I think it was something with her head the last time. But I think there's an opportunity on Jessie Pegula in that quarter. I think that's a bet. And the ones that I actually made are now on the bottom half, which is, by the way, full disclosure, I do have Iga to win it all at 4-1. But I have started making, you, me, and Felika were making some, we were texting back and forth yesterday, Aryna Sabalenka, who's in Q3, and then Coco Gauff, who's in Q4. Q3, Sabalenka has just had this press conference where she's talking about this. She has a very bothersome injury, like seriously bothersome. This just came out. And the way that she was talking in coded language, she's like, it's very rare for a tennis player, but it's a shoulder thing. So it sounds like it's a baseball injury. It sounds like it's like a rotator cuff injury of some kind, which, I mean, I don't know if you know this, but you kind of need that for your serve, which is her strength. So I grabbed Daria Kasatkina at 22 to 1 to make the final. Kasatkina is in her quarter. And I think that's not the only opportunity. I happen to bet Kasatkina, but if you think Mira Andreeva is live, I mean, she's live in that quarter as well. This assuming that Sabalenka is diminished. I think those are the two best bets. But I fired on Kasatkina 22 to 1 to make the final. And then Q4, I have Maddie Keys to win that quarter. I can't even keep track of my Maddie Keys bets now. So I think I have her to win that quarter. Let me see, because I put them in on this one account here. So I think Madison Keys, and talking about like raw grass numbers, I think there's a lot of opportunity for Keys. I happen to make her to win the to do it to win the quarter. I have her in a matchup with Iga in the finals. I have a Kasatkina matchup with Iga in the finals. So I took a bunch of like really big flyers just because of the Sabalenka injury. And I'm not, and I don't buy into Coco in this tournament for whatever reason. I just don't buy into her on grass, even though she should be good on it. She's now the world number two, Coco, believe it or not. Sabalenka's three. But I think the names you should be betting on in all kinds of directions are the ones in that bottom half. Kasatkina and Keys are the ones that I did it on. But some people will say Naomi Osaka. Some people want to take a flyer on her.
How about the first round matchups? You were texting with me earlier. I think you said you liked a lot. What are some of the ones you like?
Oh man. Yeah. So there's 64 matchups in day one, 32 on the men's side, 32 on the women's side. And I think my numbers of the 64, I like 17 of them right now. So
Wow.
it's like I'm either firing on 17 or I gotta winnow that down. I mentioned Yanni Hanfman rather, plus 9 against Sinner. I haven't bet that yet, but that's something I'm definitely considering. I think there's a bunch of dogs on the men's side that are super live, and I haven't put these out yet, but you're getting the first hear of it. I really lean towards Alex Mickelson against Lloyd Harris. He's plus 118. I lean Adrian Mannarino plus 137 against Gael Monfils. I really like Liam Brody at plus 140 against Bodek van de Zandschulp. And the real long shot is Alex Bolt, an Australian player at plus 215. I actually got him at a longer number last night, but plus 215 right now against Casper Ruud, who's one of the world's best players, but this is totally not his surface. So a bunch of dogs on the men's side. On the ladies' side, Paula Badosa is a coin flip against Carolina Mukova. Badosa just on activity, just on having played more. I like her in that coin flip. I like some random names too, who are small favorites. I like, let's see their opponents here, so I'm thorough with you. I like Evalise, that's first name Ava, EVA, last name LYS, against Clara Burrell. She's a minus 128 favorite. I like Olga Danilovich, minus 103 against Todoni, Anka Alexia Todoni. Let me see if I have any others here. Tamara Korpach plus 110. Like her against Yuriko Lily Miyazaki. You know her, don't you, Will? You know all her work.
Of course, she's played well lately.
And then thinking
Unless
about, I
she
haven't pulled
hasn't.
it unless she hasn't. Thinking about it, Katerina Alexandrova against Emma Raducanu at plus 120, but ultimately I may not pull the trigger on that because I have too much respect for Raducanu. She's in like really good form right now, so I'm scared of that. I also like Part of me is worried about Osaka. Like, I know a lot of people are already like advancing Naomi Osaka to the quarters. They're like, oh, she was so great against Iga on a surface she's not good on clay. Now on grass, she should be awesome. She has a really tough first round opponent, I think, in Dion Parry, who's nearly a $3 dog. So I'm thinking about that one too. But those are about half, if not more, of the ones that I of my 13 where I'm like, Jesus, I like way too many of these.
Sounds like we're going to be firing in a 17-leg parlay on Monday. That's what it sounds like.
What scares me about these kinds of days, though, is you know it's like, okay, if I go 10 deep, you could just sink your tournament right off the top, right?
Right.
So it's tough. And then, of course, if you don't play them, you know what happens. You go, right, you go 14-3 on them. Yeah.
Sure. Of course. And you usually pick the wrong door. As betters, that's at least how we think that we're
that's right.
End up picking the wrong door. All right. Who wins the men's? Who wins the women's?
Jannik Sinner wins the men's. And I'm going to say Iga on the lady side. And I know people will be like, oh, you with Iga. I have this feeling that she just has no pressure on her whatsoever and that she's going to surprise people.
All right. We'll switch gears to football here. I'm going to steal your own question and throw it at you because I think it's a good one. It's an interesting one. You always ask these guests and you ask me, and I feel like I had a great answer. What's your football opinion that goes against the grain, that goes against the consensus? I feel like I didn't have a great answer because it's not close enough to the season where we've gotten enough consensus. So I'm curious what you think, what your answer is to your own question.
Oh, that's an interesting take on that. You're right. Maybe we haven't. I think mine is, God, I want to, two things leap to mind. I don't think the Eagles are as good as other people do. And I think Washington has a wide breadth of outcomes where they actually could sneak into a wild card. They could suck too, but I think they can sneak in a wild card. First with the Eagles, I would say, you know, it's so funny how everybody has them. I guess there's some Cowboys people out there too. But it just seems like most people think the Eagles are not only the best team in the NFC East and that, you know, Jerry not paying all his players, that they're in turmoil. So it's the Eagles almost by default. And by the way, it might be the Eagles by default. I should say they may win the division by acclamation. But a lot of people also think they're the best team in the conference too. And I just, you know, last year they lost 6 of their last 7 games, 5 of their last 6 in the regular season with a point differential of -82. They got blown out by the Niners and the Cowboys. They lost the Cardinals and the Giants, for God's sakes. And then they were a complete no-show in the playoff, by the way, against the Bucks. And so people are like, well, you know, maybe Hurts was hurt.
Very quick to forgive it.
Yeah, very quick to forgive him. But the thing about it is, so Brian Johnson fired his offensive coordinator. Sean Desai, remember, was demoted. Matt Patricia was calling plays on defense. And now it's Vic Fangio. And so everybody's like, okay, well, this is going to be awesome. I'm a big believer in continuity. Like I've always said, like if Peyton Manning was drafted by Washington and not by Indianapolis, he still would have some Manning pedigree, but he'd have a different offensive coordinator every single year, and he would not have become the Peyton Manning we know. It's a statement I've always made that I cannot prove to anybody. But here we have with Jalen Hurts. I love it when you can make statements that can't be disproved. You know, you're like, hey, we should say it. But he's got Kellen Moore now as offensive coordinator. Last year it was Brian Johnson. The 2 years before that, which was his only continuity, was Shane Steichen. The year before that, it was Press Taylor. Not to mention in college, if you remember, Will, of course, he went to Oklahoma preceded by Alabama. So it's just a different offense all the time. And this notion that he can just so magically acclimate to that, I just don't really buy into that. And I thought, and maybe it was the injury, but I didn't think he lost a step. I thought he lost like a step and a half running the football. Then there's also this notion of, you know, so by the way, I think Nick Sirianni, like one of these things is where if things go bad early for them and they don't have the easiest schedule, if things go bad early for them, Sirianni's going to catch a lot of heat, and that's going to create like this horrible turmoil on the team. We talked about we had the draft, the NBA draft the other day, and what a ridiculous exercise it is to talk about winners and losers the day after. Remember when the Eagles were mimicking the Georgia defense? I was talking about this on the radio the other day. Jalen Carter didn't finish strong last year. Jordan Davis supposedly is in better shape, but he still weighs 350 pounds. N'Kobe Dean's a backup. Nolan Smith can't even get on the field. We know nothing about how good or bad a draft is. And their D-line depth is kind of suspect. Jason Kelsey is gone. Barkley, wear and tear. I know a lot of people think that's a huge upgrade. I'm not so sure it is. So anyway, all of that in the mix. And I'm like, people think this team is awesome? I'm not so sure. And I think the other one with that also, you know, in the same division, I do think Washington, like, if it can just keep Jaden Daniels upright, and that is a massive capital if, then I think everything that they're seeing from him is like, wow, they drafted the real deal. Like, this could be good. And they got some really good skill position players. Yeah, they don't have a left tackle. I should probably point that out as well. And it's a patchwork front office and it's a patchwork coaching staff. So it's like they could absolutely go 6-11. I have trouble with 17. I have to take a pause to do that. I'm like 6-11. But could they also go 9-8 and sneak in? I kind of think they have an interesting upside.
I mean, there's always one, if not more, in terms of sleepers. Like, nobody would have thought that this time last year, the Texans, like, there's always, it's the NFL. You always get one or two curveballs where you didn't expect, either make the playoffs, win the division. It famously, I think it's like a 50% turnover in terms of one year's playoff teams to the next. So wouldn't be shocked. It's the NFL. You can't rule anything out. It's hard to believe. Let me ask you, July 1st and then August 1st is the Hall of Fame game. Does it feel like it's a month away?
No,
Does it feel like the offseason's been long, short?
Short to me. You?
Yeah, I don't know. It did kind of 49ers Chiefs doesn't feel like that long ago.
It doesn't feel like that long ago, and I think we've had a it's been an interesting year because, well, I mean, I guess it's not like any other year, but I have felt engaged in baseball with my month-long bets. I have, College World Series, I was engaged with a bet. Tennis never stops. Golf never stops. So I just feel like there's always something. Like, if you're doing this right, there's always something. And it doesn't end. We have these international soccer tournaments, which I don't personally really get that into as much as I've tried to warm to them over the years. And now we have the Olympics coming. So it's like, it's constant, man. So the notion that the NFL is starting with a Hall of Fame game on August 1st, by the way, I'm not nearly, Will, I don't know where you stand on this. I'm not nearly the preseason nut job that some people are. So, like, I kind of don't go crazy there either.
Three team 10-point teasers on totals. Come on, you can't do that in Vegas. They don't really let you do that in Vegas.
No, but there are clearly offshore possibilities with that. But I wonder if they adjust that. What Will is talking about is the obscenely low totals that are already installed. Remember, you can't bet them
Yes.
unless you install them. And then manipulating them further with a brain dead three
Yes.
team 10 pointer. And you're just like, well, if you can score less than 23 points, tip of the cap.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, some of these open like 31 and a half. You do a three team 10-point teaser. It's like, I have to get 21 points to win. If I don't win, I don't win. But that's one, some of these Army Navy games in the past few years have done it where you can like tease it down to like 17. We're like, man, if each team scores a touchdown, it's going to go over 17. Yeah, it's interesting. You know what it is too? I think you bring up a good point where it just feels like there's always something. The extra week in the NFL, it's only one extra game and it's been a few years, but it used to be the Super Bowl was like end of January. Now it's like right around Valentine's Day and like middle of February. You got a couple weeks till the conference tournaments in basketball. And once those start, it's March Madness, and then into the NBA playoffs and then baseball and then, Masters and all these different things where you look up and you're, June or whatever, where you don't get that breath where it used to be. It would take a long time between the end of the Super Bowl and March Madness. Now that gap is just so much shorter.
That's what it is. And I've said many times that for whatever reason, adding one game,
Yep.
one week of football had the effect of like feeling like it added a month. And I think you're right. It's probably because Super Bowl happens. I famously, because people give me crap about it, right? Take a 2 week vacation. Now it's like, and now it's conference. This year was, we had a weird extra week. But
Yes.
usually it's then, and now conference tournaments start, and you're like, wait, how did this happen? It didn't used to be that way.
Yep, no doubt. And people are going to want to know your monthly bets. You alluded to it. You had the Guardians in April and May. You have the Astros still in June. As we're recording this, we don't know what's going to happen. You've either come close or I'll just leave it at that. You've come close in a lot of these. You've had a good eye for these. Have you looked at July yet?
I have. It's a big reveal coming on the show tomorrow, Will. I can't do it here.
Okay.
It's a big reveal. I have looked at it. I'm going to do it. Guardians an out away from 65-1 in March, April. Guardians would have won in May at 16-1, but they went 2-5 against the White Sox and Rockies. If you reverse that, they win it. And then here we are the morning of. I need an Astros win and an Orioles loss to win at Circa and to dead heat at Caesar. So to me, these like le I don't know what it is about these where not only do they leap off the page for me, it's like so clear which team it's worked out that way so far. But now we have a month that has an all-star break, so it's the fewest games of any month. I can tell you that the most, I'll tell you this much, the most scheduled games in the month of July belongs to the team that had the fewest scheduled in the month of June. The Mets only had 23 four games scheduled in June. They have 27. Yeah, they have the most here in July. They have 27. And the fewest games scheduled in the month of July, five fewer games in what is already a month of few games. The Padres have 22 scheduled games in the month of July. Now, that did not prevent me, right, in June. So people are going to be like, oh, well, you can't take the Padres. You got to take the Mets. Remember, the teams that had the fewest scheduled games in June, the Mets, 24, the Astros, 25, they're the teams vying for it today in a final game.
Yeah, I saw the Mets were a short price, so I had to assume they're playing a ton of games because the number was just leapt off the page that they had to have some massive advantage with the schedule. I haven't dug in yet, but when we don't have a lot of these here, I don't know that DraftKings post them. I know they posted it for April, but you've been just playing them at like what, Circa and Caesars, right?
DraftKings had it for March, April, and they bowed out after that. Whereas Circa and William Hill Caesars kept doing it month after month. I don't know why DraftKings decided to stop doing that. Yeah, I played them at both Circa and Caesars. I just want to say this too about, you know, the total number of scheduled games. The reason I go through that is you should be aware of it, first of all, because, you know, obviously that matters. But does it matter to the point, again, as I said, I took the Astros, they had the second fewest games last week. So does it matter to the point that it can't be overridden? And I would say clearly not, based on my behavior. And secondly, what the real sort of quirk that I don't think people's brains leap to is they immediately just get stuck on, oh, how many games? At Circa, where the first tiebreaker is fewest losses, by playing the fewer games, if you're involved, you win the tiebreakers automatically almost, if that makes sense.
Interesting.
So it's sort of a contrarian way to look at it.
And we will find out Monday. We will get the big reveal on Monday what the team is.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I would have given you the world global exclusive, but you didn't meet my contract demands here. So
I understand. I completely understand. And these are hard to, like, once those lines go down, they don't go back up, right? They don't update throughout the month.
No, they do not ever appear again.
Yeah.
Yeah. They do not ever appear again.
Yeah. So it's, you have to be very, it's not one of these things, oh, I missed it, but I can still play it like a worse number or whatever. I mean, you could get a worse number, but it's, once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But I will say this though, good on DraftKings in March, April, good on William Hill Caesars, good on Circa, lest I be accused of never saying a nice thing about sports books. That market and that market alone has made baseball so much more interesting, because with 162 games, you know how it is, man. You can have a few weeks spell where you sort of drift a little bit, but with this, you're always engaged. It's the perfect length bet, I think, because you do have to have sort of multidimensional thinking. It's not too long that you get bored with it. It's not too short that small sample size rules. It's perfect. I love it. And it's good on them. They've done more, to me, they've done more for the sport of baseball than Rob Manfred ever has.
Yeah, and it makes you keep an eye on the rest of the league too, which is good.
Yes, and you learn about teams, right? Like the team you're on, you're so familiar with their lineup,
right,
in a way that you wouldn't otherwise be.
Gilly, I appreciate the time. What do you have to plug here?
Numbers game, Monday through Friday on VSiN, weekdays, 10 to noon Eastern, 7 to 9 a.m. Pacific. I love how he's like struggled on a Pacific time. Like I wake up and do it every morning. I'm like 7 to 9 a.m. Pacific. And then the Beating the Book podcast, which you, Will Wilson Hilson, if you agree to it, of course, are of course part of the Megapod, which will get going right before week one of the NFL regular season. Me, you, and Dad Wishnev, for what is our second season together. Oh, can I say this on your podcast? I want to say this on your podcast. I hope you don't mind that I'm sure. Bringing this up publicly. I got a request from somebody. They're like, okay, I love the Megapod, but we need more Will Hill. And I said, I 100% agree. I am going to have that conversation with Will. And the conversation starts with, how do we get Todd to shut up? But once we figure that out, more Will Hill is required and desired by people.
I thought I was getting more shots off the second half of the Megapod, where you get the rhythms and just sometimes you have to barge in. You can't you can't wait for the ball to be passed to you. You just have to run up to Mr. Wishnev and take the ball and shoot it yourself. So I thought as it progressed, but there's certain rhythms to it. There's definitely an adjustment because he's a ball dominant guard. He's a ball hog.
He's a total ball hog. Part of it, though, in fairness, is the audio's a little janky, isn't it?
There was a couple times too where that was an issue. Early on, I feel like we corrected it, addressed it as it went on, but yes, early on, I think it was.
That's unacceptable. We got to work on that because there's a lag, right? So it's somebody gets cut off.
Yes. Yep.
Oh, as the audio people call it, it's a gate issue.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, Gilly, I appreciate it, and I'll talk to you this week.
My man, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right, that will do it. Thank you to Gil Alexander. We will be back Wednesday. Rate, review, subscribe. See you then.